Industrial Light and Magic, LucasArts, Skywalker Sound, Lucasfilm Animation. This is Looking at Lucasfilm with Jim Hill and Dan Z.
Welcome to Looking at Lucasfilm, the podcast with a different perspective on the world of Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and all of the other entities that George Lucas, Kathleen Kennedy, and the rest of the team at Lucasfilm have been dreaming up for the past 40 years. I'm entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the one, the only Dan Z, and I are recording this on Monday, March 18th, which, by the way, is my daughter's 25th birthday.
Happy birthday, Alice.
Yes, I mean, just, you know, it bums me out that she's on the West Coast, but she's coming out here in May, and we've already made plans to have our daddy-daughter birthday celebration, which for us, we're two huge nerds. It probably involves going out to see two movies and then eat Chinese food.
Nothing wrong with that.
This is true. And speaking of celebrations, and not in this case with my daughter, it'll be a belated celebration, but celebrations that are coming up, the Star Wars celebration thing in Chicago. And so we're not allowed to talk about this yet, right?
Yeah, not officially. We can say that you can expect to see myself in a couple of panels at Celebration Chicago. One of them will also feature a very familiar voice. That would be you, Mr. Jim Hill. And, of course, Coffee with Kenobi will be on the podcast stage once again.
Yeah, the plan is Nancy's going to put me in a large box with air holes and mail me to Chicago. So you're going to have to sign for that, Dan. I'm just saying.
I'll be on the lookout. Okay. And hopefully they'll deliver it to and I will say real quick, I'll plug this real quick. As far as Coffee with Kenobi's podcast stage appearance, it's going to be Sunday, April 14th from 1 o'clock to 1:45 p.m. in the room where they're having the celebration podcast stage is Level 1, W-193 A.B. McCormick Place West. And what we're asking people to do is grab a Coffee with Kenobi t-shirt from TeePublic, the Celebration Royal Blue one, and we're going to get a big group picture with the hashtag CWK Selfie. So whether you're there or not, you can still grab a shirt and feature that online. That's going to be a blast. And actually, speaking of the podcast stage, that's the first place you and I met, because at Celebration Anaheim in 2015, we were the very first podcast to ever go on the Celebration podcast stage, and you were there in the audience.
Well, yeah, and it was you did a great job. I mean, that was my first celebration, so it was a lot of firsts that trip. I still remember being in the Anaheim Arena when they showed the trailer for The Force Awakens. And the moment they showed the footage of Harrison Ford and we're home, Chewie. I've never heard an audience make that noise before.
It was amazing.
It was. And to give Kathleen credit, it was like, maybe we should roll that again. Because people were, kind of losing their minds there for a while. And speaking of people losing their minds, just in this past week, there was definitely a disturbance in the force when Bob Iger, while he was on stage in St. Louis at the shareholders meeting, revealed that the Anaheim version of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge now had an opening date. It's going to open on May 31st of this year, and that the Orlando version is going to open on August 29th. Which, relatively large news, yes?
I would say probably the biggest news we've heard from Star Wars in a very, very, very long time. But the amount of stress it's going to put on the people that have to make it come together is quite daunting, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is. And things have changed just over the past 3 months. I mean, for example, January 3rd of this year, here's Iger talking with Barron's Magazine, and he was joking that when Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opened in June, they weren't even going to spend any money on advertising. They were just going to tweet out, it's open. So we now jump ahead to February 22nd, and here's that group of reporters, including our good friend Carly, who went and walked through a full third of Rise of the Resistance. They make it as far as the Hangar Bay on the Star Destroyer, and this giant space. But here's the thing: at no time during this walkthrough of Galaxy's Edge, this walkthrough of Black Spire Outpost, does anybody mention that the land will be opening in phases, or that Rise of the Resistance would not be an opening day attraction. Rise of the Resistance is, Bob Chapek himself has said, is the most ambitious attraction that the Walt Disney Company has ever built. Depending on how you count show scenes, there are 19 individual show scenes.
I heard you and Len talking about this, and I was just completely agape while I was driving down the highway. I cannot believe, and that's that. No wonder it's going to take so long, and it's staggering.
It is. It's a lot of very complex technical stuff. It has to work seamlessly because thousands of people have to come through this thing an hour to meet its hourly capacity. So when Disneyland opened in July of 1955, it wasn't ready either. They didn't really get it sorted out till the fall. So, and remember that that's the language that's being used about Rise of the Resistance. Phase two, which will be a few months after the opening of phase one.
But we feel pretty good that the one in Orlando, when that opens, it's going to be not in phases, correct?
The thing of Orlando, the wet season in Florida runs roughly from April, May till October. And so now, you know, in theory, by that point, the buildings themselves are done. They can be inside doing all of the work or that sort of thing. But there's a reason that Toy Story Land opened, want to say, 5 weeks past its original opening date. And again, it was just, they had a very wet spring. And if you look at Toy Story Land, it's a kid's Tinker Toys out in the backyard and that sort of thing. It's wonderfully detailed and beautifully themed, but it's not nearly as complex.
It's not a galaxy far, far away.
No, no. You know how we've been talking all this time about how each of these individual Star Wars themed lands, you know, cost $600 million a piece to build?
Yeah.
I was just told by somebody at Disney's, it's like, right now, these things, when they're done, each of the East Coast and the West Coast versions of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, all by themselves, $1 billion a piece, Dan.
Oof. No wonder those ticket prices went up so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, seriously, that's got to be a connection.
There is, actually, and one of those is they want to be sure that the whole world isn't trying to go to Batu during the summer, during summer vacation, or during the holidays. If you go and listen to the Disney Dish that Len and I just did, he breaks down the new ticket prices and that sort of thing, and how they're eliminating, through just price, continually bumping up the price of park hopping. They want to know in advance where people are going to go. And, you know, so they can staff properly. And, you know, if you are headed to Galaxy's Edge, they can make sure that everybody who gets in there gets on Rise of the Resistance or gets on Smuggler's Run. So
sure, or gets into build a lightsaber. And I tell you what, though, you know that scene in Forrest Gump when Lieutenant Dan is at the front of the ship and he's yelling at the storm and he's waving? That'll be me in Galaxy's Edge of the Wall.
Well, if it's any consolation, you, while you're waiting in line, you can actually go over to the Indiana Jones Epic Stunt Spectacular and say goodbye to this version of the show. In fact, that's supposedly what one of the things they're going to do this summer is that, you know, for people who are standing in line, they're going to, hey, here's a fast pass. While you're waiting, head over to Indy. And I think, as we talked about in an earlier show, that it's now been confirmed the redo or the upgrading of the show for the 50th anniversary is a go project at this point. And this kind of ties in with the other interesting news of the past week or so with James Gunn being rehired to direct Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Yeah, which is great news.
It's tremendous news. You have to understand that he's kind of a busy guy now. He's got the Suicide Squad 2 to do before he can circle around to finally working on Guardians 3, which has been pushed out to 2021. And the interesting thing is that it will now probably come out in August of 2021. And the interesting thing is the film that will come out roughly 3 to 4 weeks before that is Indiana Jones 5. And in both cases, the interesting thing is that while they are shooting both of those films in 2020, they will also be shooting footage that will be featured in the Guardians right at Epcot and for the redo of the Indiana Jones Epic Stunt Spectacular. Because this is the interesting part of the change for the show, Dan, is that they're going to step away from the conceit that's powered the show since 89. And that's that you are attending, you know, you go into the theater and you're watching an Indiana Jones movie being shot.
I love that aspect of that. In fact, I've been in that show twice.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's fun. It's so fun.
Well, enjoy that memory, because it's most likely going away, that the entertainment team right now is rewriting that portion of the show, largely because that's not what Disney's Hollywood Studios is anymore. It's not a let's take you behind the scenes kind of park anymore. It's the whole conceit of Disney's Hollywood Studios is they put you right in the middle of your favorite films. So again, you know, when you enter Black Spire Outpost, you are on the planet of Batuu. You are not on, you know, a back lot of a movie theme park. You are on a planet. So that's what they're trying to sort of sort out the conceit of, well, what would the indie show be if we took away the filmmaking component?
Is there a concern, though, that now they're going to need that ginormous theater to get people, you know, just kind of circulate Galaxy's Edge a little more, make it a little more breathable? But that's going to be really tricky, I guess.
Well, I mean, just from an operations point of view, Dan, think about how much those vignettes with the audience members or the teaching the crowds how to be the crowds cover for when they're moving the giant set pieces in and out. I'm told that that's the whole point of shooting new scenes with Harrison, that supposedly the idea is that the monitors would kick on and he would talk about his favorite scenes from the series.
Oh, that's great.
But the idea being that they'd want to include a way to touch on all five of the movies. I remember when I attended the opening of Disney MGM back in April of 89, and they weren't, you know, the stunt show wasn't ready. They didn't actually start presenting it on a daily basis till the fall of 89. But they showed the A-Wing stunt sequence. Yep. And at the end of it, they had Eisner and Lucas and Spielberg, who took questions from the audience, and they flat out said that they were looking forward to putting scenes from The Last Crusade into the stunt show eventually.
Huh.
That never happened.
No, it did not.
Be interesting to see if they actually circle back on that at some point. So that's going to happen, and that'll be ready for 2021. And Indy is supposed to hit theaters on July 9th of that. Indy 5 is supposed to be hitting theaters on July 9th of that year. So, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens there, whether or not this will be an attraction that doesn't necessarily open the earlier part of the year with the official kickoff of the 50th anniversary. Maybe it'll happen later on. Other big news this week, the season one finale of Star Wars Resistance aired on the Disney Channel. And Dan, remember when this was supposed to be a kid's show that sold Star Wars toys? I mean, yeah, that was kind of the whole thing of why it was built around the racers that flew around the Colossus and that sort of thing. And
oh, yeah.
That first episode where it kind of had a weird tone. It was kind of goofy, and that's largely because Kaz was sort of portrayed as a klutz.
Yes.
That's not the show that just did its season one finale.
No, not even close. Not even close.
This is a show that suddenly has some weight and some depth and some real stakes. I mean, not to spoil this for anybody who hasn't seen The Escape.
Part one of No Escape is what you're...
No Escape.
Yep.
Yeah. Part one of that ended with Kaz watching his homeworld, Hosnian Prime, you know, destroyed by the Starkiller base. And the actual episode, well, we saw Tam leave the ship with the First Order because she felt betrayed by Kaz and Jaeger. Tell them what happened when the notice they sent you along with the screener of part two of No Escape.
They suggested not to reveal any spoilers, and then they told us what they didn't want us to reveal, but it was before I'd actually seen it. So I was spoiled.
I mean, the whole notion of this whole time we've been looking at the Colossus and thinking, okay, so it's a fuel depot on a backwater water world Castellan, and no, it's a ship. not only a ship, it's a ship with a hyperdrive. And at the point we are now, this story, Star Wars Resistance, has clicked right into place, is now running concurrent with a lot of the story we saw in The Force Awakens.
Right. And this, in many ways, this is very groundbreaking, because Star Wars Rebels takes place right before A New Hope, basically. Not right before, but, you know, within a four to five year span before A New Hope. But that, obviously, everyone had already known what was going to happen with the Skywalker family and the galaxy in that original trilogy time period. This, we're kind of growing along with these adventures, so we don't know what's going to happen. So it's much more of a bold way to do it, because there's so much that's unknown and ambiguous. Really quickly, though, I want to circle back. In part one of No Escape, where Kaz inadvertently witnesses the destruction of Hosnian Prime, that sequence was so chilling that it actually made my arms and hands tingle. And I think that the destruction of that planet hit me much more powerfully than any time I've ever seen The Force Awakens in theaters or at home. It was just very real, because we had more emotional investment. There really wasn't a ton of investment in Hosnian Prime blowing up, because we didn't know anyone who was on that planet when that film first originally aired in 2015. So knowing that that was Kaz's family, and how joyous he was and how innocent he was, and just sort of seeing that happen, it was absolutely chilling. And I was sitting there next to my 5-year-old Mason while we watched this. Mm. And I said, "Mason, what just happened?" And he just kind of looked at me. That was a moment. I mean, that went from a kid's show to something that the pathos was thick.
At that point, we'd had 15 half-hour-long episodes of Resistance. You know, so that's 7.5 hours of screen time. We'd live with these characters. We'd come to really enjoy their company and that sort of thing. So this hit, and remember, that there's that amazing shot in The Force Awakens of people actually on, you know, Hosnian Prime sort of looking up, and you watch the sky glow red before, but we don't know these people.
We don't know them. And we know one of them because of the novel Bloodline, but that wasn't until well after The Force Awakens came out.
Have you seen any of the Star Wars Galaxy of Adventures shorts yet?
I have. I've seen all of them.
Early on, when this was this project was announced in November of last year, you know, it was going to be used to launch the Star Wars Kids website, and these videos were going to be posted on YouTube. There was actually a good amount of grumping from the adult Star Wars fan community, because it's like, you know, the whole notion of you're going to take audio from the films and reanimate it. It's like, what is the point of this? I mean, we have the finished films. Why would you want to revisit these performances? Why would you want to revisit these moments? And I think we know the answer now, because when they're as beautifully animated and designed and sort of reimagined, it's just kind of stunning to sort of circle back on moments you thought you knew and look at them again. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the last four in particular, the two Han Solo ones, the Captain of the Millennium Falcon and Taking Flight with His Friends, or the one that just dropped this week, the Yoda Jedi Master. Oh my God, you know, these are beautifully, beautifully done.
The style is really slick, and I know that, you know, I mentioned Mason, my son, he thinks it's pretty fantastic. I will say there are moments in my life where I can foresee myself as a curmudgeonly man that yells at squirrels from the luxury of his front porch. That's not quite sure that I like this idea, but you know what? Mm-hmm. It's not for me, and it's okay. I mean, it still is glorifying Star Wars and these iconic moments. And really, you can't replicate that with voiceover, because that, or, you know, with a new actor, because the, you know, Mark Hamill is Luke Skywalker, Han Solo is Harrison Ford, and Alden Ehrenreich too, of course, to a degree, but not from the original trilogy. That's Harrison Ford's turf. So the fact that it's getting kids to like it, and like you said, the animation really is gorgeous. I mean, it is absolutely stunning, and that hooks you in tremendously.
That was the basic launching point for this project. The idea was to take key moments of the series and make them exciting and accessible to younger viewers, with the hope that they would then just turn around and it's like, I want to check out these original movies. I want to see what this was all about. There's this weird thing that's going on now generationally with film, where one of the reasons Disney's doing things like the new Dumbo, the Tim Burton version with Dumbo, or the the redo of Lion King that Jon Favreau will have out, you know, later this summer, is that there's a generation of kids who, you know, they're watching movies on tablets. They're watching movies on iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see, like, it's a traditional hand-drawn film, or if they perceive it as older, you know, an old movie,
it's,
you know,
true.
They don't want to watch it.
That's very true. I every semester when I show the films to my mythology students, that, mm-hmm. that it initially becomes a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it eventually goes away because the quality is so rich, of course. But yeah, that very much makes sense. I hadn't thought of it that way.
I love what they've done here, especially, for example, the Yoda one where they do the full arc of Yoda. I mean, you've got him back on Dagobah in the swamps with Luke, but you also show him at the height of his powers and Attack of the Clones and battling with Count Dooku and battling in the Senate with Darth Sidious. There's some great, great, great stuff. I look at these 1 minute, 2 minute, and I think the Solo Captain of the Millennium Falcon one is the longest one. It's 5 minutes. But I'd look at this and it's like, I wouldn't mind actually seeing a whole film for television or home premiere done in this style.
It'd be fun if they would go back and make some of the Legends books in this animation style, because then you don't have to worry about stepping on canon.
Well, tell you what, folks, Dan and I will continue our animated conversation about what's been going on with Lucasfilm Animation right after we get back from this break.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Dan, how many of the celebrations have you been to? Have you been to all of them? Or?
No. There have been 13, if you count the one in Germany, Japan, in the UK, and then, of course, a number of them in Anaheim and in Orlando and things like that. This will be my fourth one. I went to Celebration 3 in Indianapolis as a fan.
Okay.
And then I first started covering it in Celebration Anaheim in 2015. Then I went to Orlando in 2017. And, of course, I'll be going to Celebration Chicago.
Okay, so you were there in Orlando in 2017.
I was.
Were you there for the Star Wars Rebels panel when Dave Filoni let everybody know that the show was going to end after four seasons?
I did. I was there, and then I went to the press conference afterwards, too.
When Star Wars Rebels arrived, people kind of had a chip on their shoulder because they felt like Disney had deliberately forced Clone Wars to be shut down because, of course, it was airing on Cartoon Network, and that story wasn't necessarily completed when it was shut down. In fact, we got the Lost Missions that eventually bubbled up over at Netflix. But
Right. But
people kind of had a chip on their shoulder because it's like, you're the show that shut down my favorite show.
Right.
But once people got to see it, and once people got to see the, you know, the Ralph McQuarrie style graphics and, you know, what they were going to do, you know, with the story and that sort of thing, I think people really came to enjoy it. So
Stellar voice cast too. And in fact, I'd recently just watched all of season one again with my son, and he is absolutely devouring it, and it's making me love it all over again. That I still think it's the best animated series that Lucasfilm has ever done. Rebels will always have a very special place in my heart.
And okay, I'm blanking the name of
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Been on Coffee with Kenobi four different times.
Okay. That's great.
In fact, we interviewed him live in Anaheim. It was a blast. Oh. We had a great. It was just the four of us.
Did he ever tell you the story of auditioning for?
I love that story. But tell the story. It's fantastic.
Okay. They weren't ready to tell the cast as they were auditioning for the roles what the show was. And as Freddie told me the story, he was in the booth and he was reading, I think the phrase that gave it away was sun swords.
Something like that, yeah. Or laser sword, yeah.
He didn't say lightsabers, but it was close enough. And Freddie's like, I'm auditioning for a Star Wars cartoon, aren't I? And the people in the booth go pale because nobody else had figured this out, but Freddie had figured it out.
Probably had a four-letter word in there too, I'm sure.
He said he had to step out of the booth for a moment and go hyperventilate because it's like, Freddie, there's no bigger Star Wars fan on the planet. I mean, he was telling me about, you know, as a kid playing with my Star Wars action figures, and so to be offered this part and to be part of this show and you know, that, and to get the character that he got, you know, it's like this Jedi who was going to come out of hiding. It was a dream. He stayed that enthusiastic the entire run of the show.
I love that guy.
You can understand that when they announced in April of 2017 that Star Wars Rebels is shutting down, it's like, Disney.
I remember being kind of at peace with that, because I mean, I'm one of the rare fans who actually thinks it's okay for a story to have a conclusion.
That's not how American television works, Dan. You know, the way American television works is we take a good idea and we run it straight into the ground. We never let something end gracefully. We always make it run 3 more years after, you know, when it was good. So again, the fact that not only did Star Wars Rebels end, but it had that wonderful ending that sort of left us in a place, oh my God, they're going to go off and try to find Ezra. And it's Sabine and Osaga. I loved that moment, March of 2018, that, you know, it went out on that grace note and left us hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Thing of beauty.
But remember, in between when Dave revealed that the show was ending, I remember bringing up to you that someone had showed me a trademark for Star Wars Rebels or Star Wars Resistance. And I was like, oh, this is for a toy line. This is for something. And you were like, I can't tell you about this yet.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. You know, yeah, last year,
maybe you should sit on that for a while, because I don't, these are not the droids you're looking for. You know, that it's not a toy line. So, okay, April of last year, Star Wars Resistance officially gets announced and scheduled for a fall debut. It's going to be done in an anime style, and particularly for a lot of us who were still mourning that Rebels had ended, that, you know, this word that it was like, this is a show that's aimed at younger fans. Face it, if you're an older Star Wars fan, you're still grumpy because of Luke being taken out at the end of Last Jedi, and there's all these stories in the news about what's going on with reshoots for Solo, a Star Wars story, and, you know, we're still a month out from, you know, actually getting to see that Ron Howard movie. I think what complicated the situation was jump ahead to July, and again, and you were there also, Dan. You were there, you know, San Diego Comic-Con when the Clone Wars 10th anniversary panel, and suddenly here's this announcement that the show is coming back. You know, 12 new episodes created just for Disney Plus. And I think for a lot of folks who grew up watching Clone Wars during its run 2008 to 2014 on Cartoon Network, it's just sort of like, oh, great, the show is coming back, but in the meantime, we get this kids show. Let's be honest here. It didn't help things in August of last year when Dave Filoni revealed that he wasn't necessarily going to be as hands-on with Star Wars Resistance. He had something else he was working on, which we'd find out in October was The Mandalorian.
Right. In addition to Clone Wars as well.
Mm-hmm. So people weren't necessarily set up properly to embrace Star Wars Resistance when it finally dropped on October of 2018. But I think by the time we got to the first, you know, they did sort of their mid-season break in early December, Station Theta Black, where we get to see Captain Phasma, and we start to hint at things that are really going to start to link up with Force Awakens. And it's only, what is it? It's barely a month later that we learn that they've renewed it for a second season. And then starting on January 13th with the Bebo, I think the back 8 episodes of this are so strong and do such a nice job of sort of, you know, raising the stakes and getting you invested with the characters and all that.
There's legitimate cost those last 8 episodes, and they kind of introduce it. I think you really start to see real signs of it about 4 or 5 episodes in overall. But the last 8, it just becomes much more serious. And there's actually real concern about what's going to happen, because one thing that Resistance has going for it that the other shows didn't is we don't know the fate of these characters, and we don't know the fate of this galaxy or the fate of what's going to happen to the Resistance itself. So that adds an extra level of drama to it that no Star Wars animation has ever had before.
I don't know if you saw the announcement. I think it actually happened yesterday or thereabouts, about how Star Wars Clone Wars is actually leaving Netflix.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, April 7th, 2019. Supposedly, they get pulled off of Netflix. And of course, this is out ahead of the show coming back as a Disney Plus exclusive. But it's going to be tough for Star Wars animation fans over... Because again, we don't have a return date yet for the fall of 2019 for season two. And the Galaxy Adventure stuff, I guess, will keep us sort of chugging along.
Well, we do know there's going to be quite a few panels at Celebration about the animation. There's going to be...
This is true.
Yeah, there's going to be a Resistance one, a Rebels one, and a Clone Wars one. They have already said that for the Rebels one, they're not going to announce a new series. So that kind of puts the kibosh on the idea of what's going to happen with Sabine and Ahsoka looking for Ezra. But we do know that we're going to get to see most likely a preview of what's going to happen with the Clone Wars, and hopefully we'll get an actual concrete date about when we can expect to see that air.
Cool. Cannot wait. All right, so now to just sort of double back quick to where we are, where we've left off with Star Wars Resistance with our season one finale. So again, we talked about Tam being manipulated by First Order Security Officer Agent Tierney, and she boarded the shuttle and she left the Colossus. So we watched that story play out in real time, because over time she began to resent both Kaz and her boss Jaeger, you know, because it became obvious that something was going on and she was not being included. And at the end, when she learned that Jaeger had been lying to her.
From a certain point of view.
Yes, but see, that's what's fascinating, that I love this aspect of storytelling, that, you know, the effect of a character has a good reason to make a bad decision. Now it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. The beauty of Star Wars is we have seen characters make bad decisions, and whether or not they come to redeem themselves over time is going to be interesting. And as you mentioned, that it's a misperception on her part. She doesn't have all of the information, but Kaz and Jaeger weren't in a position to give her all of the information. And, you know, he's a spy for the Resistance, and from the history they'd established with that character, you know, her dad working in a factory for the Empire back in the day, and how she perceives the First Order being on the Colossus is a good thing versus these guys are really putting the stranglehold on us. Now to turn to Kaz, I mean, as we talked about at the very top of the show, that he's lost his homeworld, he's lost his parents. In fact, Dan, I'm almost embarrassed. We should have put this together earlier, because think about it. The one time we saw Kaz talk with his dad, it was kind of that fuzzed out image. He, you know, they couldn't actually see one another.
Oh, that's right. From the pilot, I think.
I don't know if that was a deliberate choice on the part of the production team or that sort of thing, whether is it going to hurt more if we actually show what the parents look like, or maybe this is a kindness to the audience. But even so, as you mentioned, you know, when he's looking over those crates in the corridor and watching Hux deliver his speech to the stormtroopers via a hologram, and then that image of Hosnian Prime being destroyed, and to watch his face, to watch his expression, I can't help but think they're going to have to circle back on this. He's been so
gotta
busy.
That's got to be trauma. It's got to be PTSD.
Yeah, no, that's
from
exactly.
That.
But at the same time, he's going to have his hands full, because, as you mentioned, you know, from your "don't talk about this" list, that the Colossus isn't a refueling station. It's a ship. It's a ship with a hyperdrive. And not only that, but now there are pirates on board the Colossus. And because they help the Colossus escape from the First Order, and the community is going to have to deal with the pirates and give them some sort of respect, because they wouldn't be there if the pirates hadn't helped. But on the previous episodes, we've shown this thriving merchant community that lives on the Colossus. But they're a thriving merchant community because people would come and go to the refueling station, and now they're headed off into deep space, who knows where. And more to the point, we don't know how badly the ship was damaged, because we showed the Star Destroyer wailing on the thing before it left orbit and, or escaped gravity and was able to jump.
And they don't even know where they're heading to, because Niku says he was to finish the coordinates.
And that's the other big MacGuffin here, is that
Gilligan's Island, basically, what we're going to have.
Well, I think the other thing for me, that what's a wonderful ticking clock is face it, you know, we know from both the storyline of The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi that the resistance base on Qatar is, am I saying that right?
Dakar.
Yes. Okay. That they had to abandon that because, you know, after they blew up Starkiller Base, the First Order was able to track them back to, you know, their headquarters. So they had to flee there. So, and here is Kaz, and, you know, giving the coordinates to Niku so they could jump that much closer to the resistance. And now they don't know where they're going to end up. If they're going to try to hook up with the resistance is abandoning that base. And I guess for me, I love the stakes. I love the way that they've mapped this out. More to the point, I would argue at this point, this is not a kid's show anymore. I mean, I realize it's animation, but
it's got more overt adult themes with real challenges. But it's great because, as I said, I show my little boy. So that opens up the opportunity to have interesting conversations about the nature of good and what isn't good and what does it mean to look out for your friends. Pretty fascinating stuff, really.
So you're sitting there with your five-year-old and you watch those scenes where Niku is flushed the stormtroopers out.
Yeah.
You know, into rather deep water. And the interesting thing is there's a commercial break between one specific scene where they flush like three stormtroopers out in the deep water. And then they come back for the commercial break and there's the equivalent of a sawfish that sort of swims through the shot, but it's got a stormtrooper's helmet in its mouth. So I'm going to assume that not everybody makes it to the surface.
Well, yeah, that's why it kind of reminds me of the G.I. Joe cartoons where they show the Cobra guys when they fall out of their jets or helicopters and all of a sudden the parachutes pop out at the end. What I told my son was, oh, look, he's still swimming. He must be able to breathe in that stormtrooper armor. Now, I know that's not true, but I'm glad that it was just ambiguous enough that I don't have to explain that part.
You're a good dad. Yeah. So that's a good dad explanation. But I have to tell you that all I can think of is as I'm sitting there watching this is, do you know that scene from Kevin Smith's Clerks where they're talking about how the Death Star, you know, is filled with contractors?
Oh, yeah.
You know, Luke and Han, you know, took out the Empire, or the biggest weapon of the Empire, but they also took out thousands of contractors. And I guess I'm at a weird place in my life when I see guys, stormtroopers, you know, washed out into deep water. It's like, oh, that's not going to end well.
No, and that's another example of the cause, because, you know, Kaz is very whimsical and very much like a walking member of the Three Stooges, but but the things that happen to these guys that are trying to kill him, they're no joke. I mean, there's nothing kid about that. I know exactly what you're saying.
So again, Star Wars Resistance returns for season 2 on the Disney Channel this fall. So maybe I'll do a quick cutaway to the meanwhile, back on Castellan, a bunch of guys clutching debris, you know, it's like and hoping that the Star Destroyer is picking up, you know, stormtroopers who are bobbing around in the water.
And if, by the way, speaking of Resistance, if you are not quite fully caught up, you can check on stars.com. I did a refresher course for people on basically what the impetus for Star Wars Resistance is and caught everybody up on everybody's character arcs, because we didn't even talk about Captain Doza or anything like that. So that's all on stars.com for you.
Very cool. Wow. But if that's not enough, Dan, if they want even more of Star Wars goodness, where can they find your other stuff around the web?
Sure. Well, they can certainly find me each and every week on coffeewithkenobi.com. Anywhere you can listen to podcasts, you will find us. And last week, we started our Road to Celebration shows. A month out from every celebration, we basically take that week and just give you sort of a glimpse of the news and announcements and panels, give you strategies, whether you're a first-timer or a Star Wars Celebration season veteran. I think it's something that will really help you prepare. And maybe just as important, if not more so, if you're not able to make it to Celebration, we want you to feel like you are still a part of that experience virtually. So Coffee with Kenobi is certainly the way to go for that. You can also, as I mentioned, find my writing on StarWars.com and on IGN. And if you do make it to Celebration, again, Sunday, April 14th from 1 o'clock to 1:45 on the podcast stage, you will see us there.
My side of the fence, we've got the podcast Started It All, Disney Is with Lynn Testa. We've got Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, who, by the way, over at his Light the Fuse podcast, got a 3-part series going with director Brad Bird. Do not miss that.
Phenomenal.
Universal Joint, which I do with Dustin Fuse. We've been getting very heavily into the Harry Potter over there lately. I Want That with Michelle Valladolid. And of course, we also have been doing the Marvelous Disney podcast, which just been wading through all of the Captain Marvel stuff and getting ready to start talking about Endgame. So be sure to check all of those out. And also on behalf of Mr. Z, if you like what you're listening to, if you could head over to iTunes and rate and recommend the show, that would be greatly appreciated. We also, further on, if you like to really like what we're doing here and want to help support it, head over to Bandcamp and subscribe. We are doing some special Bandcamp-only content that you'll want to check out. On behalf of Dan, thanks for listening tonight, and take care, folks.
Thank you for listening to Looking at Lucasfilm with Jim Hill and Dan Z, one of many great podcasts on the Jim Hill Media Network.